Welcome to this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
I'm Annie Warmke.
And today we're going to talk about the regulations surrounding sustainability, or why is everything I want to do illegal?
I don't know. Uh-huh. I'm confused already.
Well, that's the title of a book, and I'll give credit to Joel Salatin. I know he's one of your favorite guys, and from Polyface Farms. And one of the things he brings up in this book, I know, well, is essentially he's famous within the organic food industry. Attends, like, speaks at every conference we've ever gone to, I think, and he talks a lot about the illegality surrounding food, you know, trying to provide food that you've grown yourself to the market, and how government steps in with one regulation after another regulation after another regulation that makes that process pretty much illegal. And one that I was reading about from his perspective, which was interesting, he raises a lot of meat products, and apparently it is against the law to butcher your own meat at your farm, so it has to be taken off-site and processed at an abattoir.
Okay, I just want to say that it's not illegal to do that if you have a certain number and it's for your own use. It's for the
Right, sale. If you're wanting to sell it.
Yes.
So, but his argument was, okay, I am being forced by the government to take these to another location. But then when I bring that material, that meat back to sell it on my farm, the government then says, oh, that's a product that was not from your farm. It's from another location. And therefore, you fall under a whole bunch of other regulations that are pretty much the same regulations that apply to the large grocery right. stores. Walmart.
But the government loves bacteria, and they create these situations so we can just generate lots more bacteria and lots more opportunity for foreign things that don't belong there to exist. One of the things you're describing is the issue that big farms, corporate farms, these ones that have, you know, thousands of pigs, thousands of chickens, whatever, they create lots of problems. They're toxic waste dumps, basically, and the people who work there are the factory workers, and it's a sad commentary on our culture. But what happens then is they do things like create E. coli outbreaks and recalls of food and things like that, and then they decide, the government says, all right, our first response to all of that is to make more laws. And then those laws trickle down to the small farmer, and then we have to comply, which is sometimes not realistic. So we're going to make a choice. We go out of the business, or we stop doing one leg of what we do, or we break the law.
And a lot of these laws that are passed are lobbied for and created on behalf of these large farmers. And it's one thing that if you've got 10,000 animals that you're processing, you can afford to invest $10,000, $20,000 in a thing, whatever that thing happens to be, that then complies with the law. But if you're raising 50 chickens and then you're required to invest $20,000 in that same thing.
That's right. It puts you out of business.
And that's intentional or unintentional. Doesn't really matter, but it's result.
Well, it's also the fact that the small farmer doesn't really have a voice. We don't have big lobbyists. But
well, I remember, and I'll, you know, when they were having the avian flu scare, And they decided that it was because of these disease within chickens.
Well, because we have free range chickens,
right? Well,
and
that was
little sparrows and things can come and get in the feed, and they're bringing the disease.
Well, and that was the wacko end result of all of this is the government came back and said, well, these large factory farms with hundreds of thousands of animals packed together in 6 feet of chicken manure. You know, are clean and hermetically sealed and therefore aren't a problem. But it's, you know, it's Aunt May with her six chickens in the backyard.
Yes.
Those are the ones that are causing
That's
the
right.
problem.
So they swoop in and take your chickens and kill everything.
Right, right.
Yeah, even whether they're not sick or not. So mm-hmm. anyway, the thing I would say, too, is that what you're also talking about when you talk about the likes of Joel Salatin is that there are people who decide they're going to push the law. And so you got to know what the law is before you're going to break it. And I think, you know, one of the challenges is that if you defy the law, as Mr. Salatin has done in the past, then you bring the law down on you, and then you make it harder for the rest of us. It doesn't change things for the better. I think we have to understand what's the limit of how many birds that we can grow out to be able to butcher, and how we can kill those birds on our own property. Maybe we form collectives or whatever. But again, it comes back to, I've got to know what those rules are before I'm going to break them. Okay. And that applies to whether it's food or buildings or
energy. Well, and I think that's the point of this show, because I really don't want it to be a rant against how stupid the government has set these things up. I want it to be more more helpful and say, okay, well, what are some of these regulations? And one of the regulations that came about as a response for people who didn't trust the food that they were consuming is, let's just talk a second about organics, because organics was this, you know, I want to be pure, I want only organically created and raised food. So how has that morphed? What's gone on with the whole world of organics? First off, what do you need to be organic? What do you need to qualify
as organic? Well, I think organics really started back like in the 50s with the Rodale people over in Pennsylvania. And they were, I think, the first people to really coin that whole thing about organic food and stuff like that. And they put their money where their mouth was. And what they did was they embellished the soil. They used natural things to embellish the soil, like fish emulsion and poo from animals.
So they're saying we're not going to use chemicals.
Right. So they moved away from chemical use. And they also said things like about heirloom plants versus genetically modified plants, because they were starting to do some of that even in those days. And so when we talk about the word organic, we mean the word natural. We can just almost
Well, that's
say,
what people think of, but it doesn't mean that legally anymore.
Well, the thing is that organic has its own quality depending on what you're laying it onto. So if it's seeds or it's food or it's meat, you know, it's how ant livestock are raised, they just have it's just different for everything.
But you have to be certified organic now to
yeah.
claim
well,
that
legally,
you are
that's
organic.
Right. Or you can do what's called naturally raised. So there's a national naturally raised group.
But isn't petroleum natural? I mean, it wasn't invented by some magician somewhere. I mean, it's
like organic cotton, and then you see it was grown in Egypt and picked by 4-year-old children. Mm-hmm. You know, so the reality is that organic is defined by something natural, and I'm just going to say that because it has morphed into other definitions. And if you go to like the organic farm people and you start to raise these issues, they deny that it's really morphed over time or anything like that. So I don't really want to get into
right.
The
okay. So I guess where I'm coming from is that the organic term started out with this thing of saying, okay, I want something that's natural, something that's
non-chemical. Without chemicals.
It's become a bureaucracy in and of itself, a process that people go through to get this right, because the government stepped in and said, anybody can call themselves organic. We're going to put some rules in here. And the rules have now morphed over time to essentially allow large corporate entities to stick that label on. So
like Walmart, when Walmart yeah. says Walmart organic, that's an oxymoron. It comes from China.
So now we're back. Now we're back to the idea that organic means essentially doesn't give you that warm and fuzzy. You can't really.
Right, but there are ways to control that, and one of those ways is to know where your food's
right, and that comes down to
right.
Local.
So we go back to the idea of farmers who butcher on their own land or whatever. And yeah. in the state of Ohio and some other states, it is possible to butcher on your own farm and sell from there. But if you take it to a processor, that processor has to have a federal inspector, and, you know, it's got to be a certain temperature and all that stuff. And so the problem is that we understand that there are ways that we can raise food and grow food and raise livestock for butcher and eggs and all that kind of stuff. And you know, we can go through trainings. They have something called a gap training now that they like farmers to go through if they're going to sell at a farmer's market or a produce auction. And it basically is a safety training, but it does move away from using manure for fertilizer and things like that. And so it gets very confusing in the process when we say, look, our goal is to raise food in a natural way, is to save seeds, to do all those kind of things. There are rules and regulations for all of that kind of stuff.
Okay, and some of those rules and regulations, for instance, most states will allow you, if you're raising or selling your own things, they'll allow you to sell baked goods, jams, jellies, anything that doesn't really require refrigeration. They'll allow you as long as you then say this item is home produced. And as I recall, a lot of this came from the Amish, you know, pushing through saying, okay, this is silly.
Well, they don't believe in government, but yeah. They're advocates, I guess.
And acidified, like pickles.
Acidified.
That's a better way of saying that. You know, canned, pressure canned, things like that. So, and that seems to make a certain amount of common sense, saying, okay, if this is a fairly benign, fairly safe food, that's
You mean in its own right,
in
like
its
the
own
acidity
right.
level?
Yeah. I mean, you would trust your aunt to make it for you. You know.
Okay, there's the problem. There's the rub. Mm-hmm. Because, for example, if you don't know that person, you don't know really how that person produced that food. And you don't know what existed in that building where that food was produced. So there mm-hmm. is some reason there, but it's gone overboard. Where's okay. the balance here?
I'm going to give these guys the benefit of a doubt because they're not getting up every day the regulators.
Oh.
They're not getting up every day saying how can we you know mess with the small family farmer. They're saying just because it's not your aunt, it's someone you don't know. You can't look inside their kitchen. You can't look inside their behavior.
But even if they do,
but if there's a reasonable expectation, this food is safe. We're going to let you sell it. And as long as you put some identifying on like this is home produced as opposed to like that's, you know, I don't know why that
but
would
that
be
makes
a
it all right. It's not a warning.
Okay.
It's just telling you it didn't come through a factory that was whatever. But let's mm-hmm. talk a second about selling eggs. So mm-hmm. in Europe, most of the places I've been in Europe, you can buy eggs that are that day's eggs, and then there's a sign for another stack that says day-old eggs. Anyway, those eggs are not washed. They're sold in half dozen containers, cardboard.
And they're not refrigerated.
No, they are not refrigerated, but the reason is they don't need to be because when an egg is laid, that hen is really brilliant. She puts a coating on that egg that creates a barrier to bacteria because she needs that egg to last at least a month if she's going to set on it, and she needs it not to get bacteria in it. So we take this egg that's perfectly fine that might need a little rubbing off. Maybe there's a little bit of dirt on it, or maybe nobody cares. And then we wash it, and we take away all the barrier that's protecting it, and we put it in an environment where we think because it's refrigerated, all will be well. But it's not always the case.
Right. So basically, you're taking a product that is inherently safe.
Natural,
and by cleaning
organic,
it,
yes.
cleaning it and making it look pretty, you're making it inherently unsafe. And
yeah.
then you're trying to
well,
act like, look, eggs are dangerous. You know, it's like,
yeah.
all right, they're only dangerous because you made me wash it.
Yeah. So that's the problem. And there are all kind of warnings on egg cartons now that have to be there. So because of these problems.
It's a wonder we ever survived.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, you are listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke, reminding you and all those egg producers out there that it is the end of the world as we know it.
Thank God.
Thank God. Certainly for that omelet, it's the end of the world as we know it. So anyway, so there's a lot of rules around eggs. I know that if you're raising 500 or fewer birds, that you don't need a permit typically to sell
well,
your
if you're,
eggs.
It, okay.
Yeah. Otherwise, you'll need a permit.
Okay.
But they also say they must be refrigerated, which gets to that whole thing of the reality is in most of the world, people don't refrigerate their eggs because—
But if you're raising 500 birds, you're—
This is less than 500. We're in the world of less than 500 birds.
Okay, 499 birds.
Right.
That's a commercial. That's not—
yeah. Yeah.
That's not the guy on his farm.
But let's talk about the guy who's just on his farm with a dozen chickens.
Okay.
All right. But they still need to be refrigerated, which is kind of silly.
Well, how do you prove that?
Well, that's one of the things. I mean, just because we pass a law, just because we pass a law doesn't mean we have to enforce it.
No, that's right.
We're only going to pick on the guy that we don't like, and then we're going to enforce it, right?
Okay.
So anyway, there are some rules there about how they're supposed to be labeled.
But let's talk about just the difference between that egg when it's grown in a commercial.
Okay, you're fixated on eggs here.
No. But I just want to point out, you asked me the definition of organic. So I'm just going to walk you through, because this is a great example. So the eggs that you're buying in the store, it might say caged free.
Free range, baby.
Well, free range often means that the last day or two, they're outside in the sun somewhere. Mm-hmm. But almost always, those terms are carefully crafted by marketers to make you think that those eggs are organic and natural. So if we want to have an organic egg, first of all, it's got to have a feed that has a variety of grains in it, often called layer mash. And that animal also has to have the ability to roam, but have food in front of it all the time and clean water. That animal, and these are not me setting these guidelines, these are set by humane treatment of animals. They also need to have, under the definition of organic, they need to be able to be out where there is sunlight a major part of the day. They also have to have the ability to scratch and have their own space so they are able to eat bugs because they're omnivores and they need a variety of food. And they also have to be humanely butchered. So these are all parts of the organic world that should be the definition of how we eat something that's organic. So then that animal, that bird's going to lay an egg. That egg that comes from that bird that ate non-GMO food and saw the light of day and ate bugs, your body is going to use that in a very healthy way,
a totally different way. Experience, it's a very different looking thing. It tastes different. Oh, yeah. It's a different
food. But even beyond that, so people can say, well, whatever. But if you buy an egg from the grocery store, most grocery stores, 99% of those eggs are not going to be an animal that's seen the light of day, had non-GMO food, eaten bugs. So that egg, when you ingest it, is going to be used very differently and not necessarily in a positive way by your body.
Okay. But this is not a show about eggs. This is a show
but I'm
about
showing
regulations
you the difference.
Around. Yes.
You asked me the definition of organic,
right.
Jay. Yes, you did.
God, it's so long ago, I've forgotten. So anyway, okay. So when we talk about other rules like away from doing your baking, like we've run into these situations like with commercial kitchens. Commercial kitchens, there are some communities have set up commercial kitchens that you can share in.
Well, that's the whole point of commercial kitchen, is that it's set up to meet the regulations that the government set. So if you want to produce a product there, whether it's a baked good or it's a jam or
salsa,
something you've canned, dog food, it doesn't matter, whatever you want to produce in that commercial kitchen, then that gives you the right to commercially sell that product.
Right, because a lot of smaller businesses cannot afford the investment that's required to create a commercial kitchen. So there's an alternative there to say, okay, let's have a community commercial kitchen that we can use for that period of time.
Right.
But when and how you need a commercial kitchen is going to be dependent upon what you're producing
and
how much of it you're producing.
Right.
So you really need to talk to your, county health department to see, is this product that I'm going to be producing, does it require a commercial kitchen? It's funny, at Blue Rock Station, we had that situation where somebody had questioned whether we needed a commercial kitchen because we served or you served some cookies or something to guests. And it cracked me up because this is where the laws get really goofy. They ruled that we did not fall under the laws that deal with commercial kitchens. But in order to comply with the law that we don't need to comply with, we had to put a sign up saying we did not need to comply with that law.
Okay. It had to do with licensing.
I know, but that was silly.
So I mean, it really did have to do with—
Listen to the absurdity of it. The law does not apply to you, but you must put up a sign saying that the law does not comply to you. Otherwise, you are in violation of
that.
The law that doesn't apply to you.
But I just want to say
that's my rant.
That the thing is that the law in each state is different, mm-hmm. and it tells you, and maybe even in your county, may have some different requirements that basically say what you have to do if you are going to serve food that you produce there, or even if you bring it from somewhere else that's legally produced in another place, how many meals you're allowed to serve without a license. And so the question was not really about how the food was produced, but it was the fact that we didn't possess a license. And then they said under the revised code for the state, we had to have a sign that said we weren't required to have a license.
Because obviously then every time you had dinner guests over, you might have to have a license. I mean, if it was going to apply.
That's right. If you feed so many meals. Well, if you charge money.
Yeah.
So that's the thing of it. If you don't, then then that might be something different.
Okay,
I don't know what the law is.
Speaking of rants, I'm going to throw raw milk out at you.
Okay.
Because this is one of your pet peeves, being a dairy goat farmer. Rancher, whatever.
Herder.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's hear from the herder.
So
talk a little bit about the raw milk issues, because that, again, varies from state to state and locale.
Yeah. Well, each state is unique in how they deal with raw milk, and some states think raw milk's really the best thing that could possibly happen, and other states think it's worse than having an Uzi.
It's so funny. You walk 1 mile over the border, and it's like, we love it, we love it. You're going to jail.
But don't take milk over the border and try to sell it, because then you'll get into the feds, and then you will go to prison.
Mm-hmm.
So raw milk, it means, that it's not pasteurized. It's not heated past the point of basically destroying all the good bacteria that's in it, plus supposedly bad bacteria.
Making it colored water.
Yeah. And so raw milk is a really tremendous food, and so then we pasteurize it and we destroy it. So there are some creameries now, because you'll know if it says creamery, a lot of times it's going to be a more healthy kind of product coming out of there. And they do use a certain level of pasteurization, but it's not high heat. So milk can be better for you if it's not ultra pasteurized, is the wording. But raw milk is pretty terrific, and a lot of times people want to have raw milk for a variety of reasons, whether it's health or maybe like with goat milk, raw goat milk for a baby that can't handle lactose. And but the laws are really, really tough in states where they don't like raw milk. And this is, you can watch the progression of how this happened, because in the 30s, the government decided that all milk needed to be cooked before it could be ingested.
And that was a reaction to basically unhygienic processes that were happening in a lot of dairies, and people were getting sick, right? So it seems
no,
a reasonable
I don't think
response.
So. I don't see that in the history.
Oh.
It was a government regulation coming in, bigger farmers that had bigger dairies coming in.
You mean they were doing it not for the reasons they said, but for their own personal
profit?
Well,
if you looked at the history. A lot of these small farms that were, maybe selling a little bit of milk here and there, They stopped doing it, and because they didn't want to be involved in the process or be inspected or whatever. And so over time, when you look at the history of diseases and illness that has come out of milk consumption, up until a couple of years ago, there were 19 cases of listeria, which is can be a deadly bacteria, and that if you ingest it, it's in milk. And of those 19 cases, two of them came from farms. The other 17 came from milk from the grocery store that had been pasteurized. And recently, there's been a lot more of these kind of cases in ice cream and things like that. And again, but that's not coming from the small farmer. That's coming from the big dairy farms.
So basically, they're saying you must pasteurize your milk to protect you from diseases that predominantly come from pasteurized milk.
From big dairies.
Yes, okay.
Well, that's the same problem over and over. So
mm-hmm. So raw milk is an issue, and we've talked about this with politicians that come to Blue Rock Station, where we say, all right, you come here and you say that it is illegal to sell raw milk or raw milk products because it's too dangerous. but I can go to any flea market and buy an AK-47, you know. So
yeah.
So
yeah.
It's what they choose to discuss or what they choose to regulate, and it's the rhetoric typically has very little to do with what the motivation is behind the laws.
And it's also who are the lobbyists? Where's the big money? You know, who's paid the politicians for their elections?
You get the best government you pay for. So let's jump off.
That's not true. If you look at how much.
Let's jump off of raw milk. Let's go into, because this whole food thing is even beyond that. You know, it's one thing to live in a farm and we raise some dairy goats and some chickens. But what if you live in a city or a suburb? And there's a whole thing around, you know, basically the government has decided they call them food producing animals. They don't want to call them livestock or whatever. I guess you could eat your chihuahua, but they don't.
Or guinea pigs or rabbits.
Well, actually, rabbits fall within this food-producing animal.
Yeah, that's right.
And they fall into.
Well, guinea pigs could, too, if you had enough of them.
So they talk about large animals, you know, and the issues that are raised when you're talking about raising livestock in a confined area such as they're the same issues that apply on a farm. But they identify them as humane issues, nuisance issues, which are noise, smells,
right, if you have a rooster.
Pests, waste disposal. What do you do with all the manure and the like? Setbacks.
That's probably the worst issue here, because people can only compost so much of the manure, and so they end up putting it in a bag to go with their garbage. But every municipality is going to have some kind of regulation around this issue of keeping animals for eggs or meat or manure, whatever you're doing with it. And what's happened is there's a growing industry around this of products and little chicken tractors and things like that, because lots of people have begun to keep chickens in their backyard or keep a goat or rabbits or whatever for meat. And so the growing part of the government has been, like, for example, in some cities where there has been no regulation, suddenly it's $1,000 to have chickens because you have to have a certain kind of mat for underneath the chicken house. You have to have inspections of the chickens. You have to have the chickens inoculated. And then every year you have to have an inspection that you pay for, and you have to have a license.
So these are expensive chickens.
They are, but I guess if you want real food and you want to be healthy, then people are willing to invest in that, and that's what's happening. So this is a challenge in municipalities. In the county, then there's less regulation. Again, there would be some regulations in some places, but, you know the law if you're going to think about breaking it.
And one thing that came up when I was looking this up is about bees, you know, raising bees in a city, which struck me as like a fairly innocuous occupation, but apparently people freak out about it.
Well, people are terrified of snakes and bees. So,
well, I wasn't going to raise snakes.
No, but bees are terrifying to people, and they think every sting is going to be death.
Okay, well, you have been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. We want to thank our award-winning producer, Adam Rich.
Oh, yeah.
And we want to thank you also for just spending a little bit of time with us. And as your grandmother, Anna Bees, told you, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is...
play nice with others, clean up your own mess, and eat your vegetables.
My biodiverse vegetables.
Oh, yeah.
Until next
organic.
Time. Bye-bye.
Mother Earth will sing, and her children will be healed. Come on, see the morning glory blossom in the night. Know the skies dancing in twilight. Soon we'll be together, all will be revealed. Mother Earth will sing, and her children will be healed.
You can find more information on living sustainably in our unsustainable world at BlueRockStation.com.